Jen.
Hi, Sarah. You've got a big weekend ahead of you.
I know. I'm going to Birmingham, Alabama. Have you ever been to Birmingham?
If my mental map is correct, then yes, once Mr. Reed's romance and his entire family and I in a minivan drove from Houston to Atlanta, and I think we stopped in Birmingham at a Waffle House.
Aw, well, that's so nice. I've never been to Birmingham. I've been to Alabama. I was in Alabama one time when I was in middle school. I was on the Science Olympiad team.
Ooh, nice.
And we were the best Science Olympiad team in all of Rhode Island. And we went to Auburn University to compete in the National Science Olympiad.
That's amazing.
And we lost horribly, and I sprained my ankle in the woods. So
they had Science Olympiad out in the woods?
There was like map reading or compass reading or something, and I tripped and I fell and I sprained my ankle, and it was all very sad. And apologies to Jeff Sikowski, who was my partner on that trip, and we lost the compass reading competition because I sprained my ankle in the Alabama woods.
I will say, I bet it's a really nice time of year in Alabama, right? I bet it's going to be warm and sunny in spring.
You would think so, but according to the weather, it's 38 degrees in Alabama today.
Okay.
So, well, anyway, I'm going to see the best part about it is I'm going to see my friend Rachel Hawkins, and then I'm going to see Naima Simone, and Naima and Sally Kilpatrick and I are going to do two sessions on romance as part of the Southern Voices Book Festival, despite the fact that I am neither Southern nor do I write about the South. But it's fine. I'm fond of the South. So
I bet they have sweet tea. I think it's going to be delightful. I'm going to have a wonderful time.
Fried food. Ugh. And yeah, I'm excited. I'm ready. I'm hoping for a green tomato, but I don't think they're in season.
Yeah, I don't know.
Our Southern listeners are going to be like, Sarah, you're such a dum-dum. So anyway, Birmingham, I hope that you see us. I hope I've met you. If not, next time. Anyway, welcome everyone
to Faded Mates, everybody. Enough about Sarah's travel plans. Yes. I will be home in cold Chicago. We are going to see a play.
What play are you going to see?
We're going to see a play at Steppenwolf called Bug. And if you are not a Chicagoan, I will tell you that Steppenwolf is always like where you go, where you just want to like stare down into the pit of the soul of humanity.
Mm.
I've never seen a play there that was not just like, that didn't have the thesis like people are terrible.
Well, yeah. Isn't that where that Steppenwolf produced John Malkovich, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love John Malkovich a whole lot. He's a super weirdo. And I will watch him do anything. So, A+ Steppenwolf. Great job.
Great job raising a weirdo. It's going to be great. I think it's going to be real great. We are not talking about theater, really, or John Malkovich or anything this week. Should we introduce ourselves? Did we do this?
Oh, yeah. I'm Sarah McLean. I write romance novels and I read romance novels.
And I'm Jen Reads Romance. And I read romance novels and write about them for Kirkus. And Jen my random ass thoughts on Twitter. I'm Jen Reads Romance.
Everybody, if you didn't get a chance to read Jen's absolutely brilliant piece in Kirkus this week or last week on obituaries and the jumping off of the obituary that the Times wrote of Joanna Lindsay for Joanna Lindsay's death, and talking about gender and how we write about women who write and how we talk about women who write and how misogyny and patriarchy are in everything we do, you absolutely should. We'll put it in show notes.
Oh, that's nice, Sarah.
And by we'll put it in show notes, I mean Jen will put it in show notes.
Yes, that is also true. Fine, I'm going to put myself in show notes. It's our podcast. We get to do what we want.
Do what I say. Put yourself in show notes.
This week, however, we are going to be talking about Tessa Bailey, the queen of dirty talk herself.
Oh, she's so good. Yeah. So I actually was going back through. So the book we're actually going to be talking about is Asking for Trouble, which is like a book, The Blooded Sarah. We both had Tessa Bailey books on our lists. But we're going to talk, I think, probably about Tessa Bailey in general after we talk about this book specifically, because I'm a big fan for a lot of reasons. I think she just really is like speaks to my id, whatever that is. Here's the thing. I was looking back because I was like, God, what was the first Tessa Bailey book I read? And I was looking back through my Amazon, my content and devices. And in 1 2-week period, starting in 2016, when I'm guessing one of her, like her books were on sale because I bought a bunch of them for like 99 cents, I read 12 Tessa Bailey books in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
From, I'm not even kidding. It was from like June 16th or 17th, 2016 to like July 1st. It's literally like Tessa Bailey, Tessa Bailey, Tessa Bailey. Like I just gobbled them all up. So.
I read Tessa Bailey. This is Asking for Trouble is my first Tessa Bailey.
Interesting. Okay.
And it was because my friend Sophie Jordan, who also loves a dirty talker, she recommended, like she had either met Tessa somewhere or like had read one of these books. And she was like, you gotta do this. You gotta read her. She's amazing. She's like, the books are super hot. They have this like incredible straight shot. And I've never read Dirty Talk like this Dirty Talk. And I was like, yeah. Well, challenge accepted.
And then you were like, oh.
And then I was like, holy crap. And so, I mean, like, truly, I think we're going to talk about these books. We're going to talk about so many of the things. Look, the reality is, like, on paper, I should not love these books.
Sure.
They're not my kink. Largely not my kink. I don't like police officer romances. Like, they are not a thing that I read very much of. But, man, Asking for Trouble hits, like, it fires on all cylinders for me.
Well, it's because he's not really a cop on page at all. Like,
no.
We never really see him at work, I think.
No, no. And I, like, when he's introduced, he's like, oh, he's like an explosive expert and it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, he blows shit up and that's all you need to know. But I do love Enemies to Lovers. So that is part of why this book, I think, really, like, works so well for me. But truly, I want to talk. I feel like this whole episode is really going to be about dirty talk and what we want from it and what it does on the page and why Tessa seems to be so good at it.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But why don't we talk about the series first? Do you want to like explain the series?
Sure.
And then talk about your book, which is the first one, which is her debut, we think.
I think so, yeah, which is real wild. Talk about, like, just starting real hot.
I'm gonna text her and see if she'll text me back while we're doing it, but go on.
Okay, so this, well, it's really interesting. The first book of the series takes place in Chicago. It's called Protecting What's His. And basically I don't really want to necessarily get into it. What's interesting is the rest of the series takes place in New York. And then a second series she writes is about, like, sort of cops in New York and then, like, returns back to Chicago. So she kind of – so the character who is the first hero in Protecting What's his name is Derek. not Derek Craven, but my second favorite romance, Derek. And he kind of returns as, like, their lieutenant in that whole second series. So we get, like, little glimpses of him.
Okay, she just texted me back. That is her debut.
Jesus, wild. this book, Asking for Trouble, centers around a group of friends in New York. And essentially, like, some of the friends are cops. And then, like, as they fall in love, some of the women's friends date the other cops, right? And the one before this, I think, is about a detective. Then there's this one, Brent, is an explosives, you know, sort of
expert, whatever. In the next book, it's like Brent's sister and their other friend. And then there's also one where it's sort of a little bit of an outlier. I think the bridge is a cop from Chicago that worked with Derek comes to New York and sort of like meets these guys. So it's like not really as tight in terms of like the way the relationships are as some later series. But in this one, Hayden, who's our heroine, is like this society princess who really, you know, she like works at a nonprofit, but she's basically like rich and has like a townhouse on the Upper East Side, which I can't imagine is cheap. And then we get Brent is this explosives expert, and they're drawn into each other's orbits because in the previous book, his best friend and her best friend fall in love. And mm-hmm. they just are like sniping at each other. And as this book opens, she finally, essentially the gauntlet gets thrown down and she's like, fine, come back with me. Like all of their flirting, all of their sort of hate talk was really flirting talk. We come to understand and they come to understand, right? So he goes back to her house with her and they basically don't even make it out of the foyer. Mm-mm. She like rides his face. It is really, really hot. And then like basically there's a knock on the door and it's interrupted. And like, so the rest of the book is sort of this, like, I don't know. It's really interesting too. I think the plotting of this book, which we can talk about, but kind of them figuring out that their animosity was really sexual tension and how to resolve these class differences between them.
Yeah. Which is, I think, so powerful. There's like, at first yeah. blush, these books, which came out from Entangled. So this whole series was Tessa's first series. And she wrote them. I mean, I remember when I met her for the first time, it was pretty quickly after this, these books had come out, and mm-hmm. she put out something like 5 books in 2013, like just was writing like crazy. And, yeah. And it's really awesome. Like she sort of was one of those authors who this was right as ebooks had become, like, it was clear mm-hmm. that we were never going back. Like ebooks yeah. and indie publishing and small presses were going to dominate romance for the foreseeable future. And Tessa was one of the first writers. So I remember a little bit before this, maybe 2 or 3 years before this, I met Bella Andre at an RWA conference, and she told me that there were 2 ways to succeed in romance as an indie published author, as a small press published author, as an ebook, like a digital author. And those 2 ways were, 1, you were old enough, Barbara Freethy style or Roxanne Sinclair style, mm-hmm. to have a massive backlist and to yeah. have been smart enough to collect that backlist before the publishers knew what they had, what they were sitting on.
Interesting.
And like, so Barbara Freethy, I'm sorry, guys, I'm going to take a little diversion trip and then come back. But like Barbara Freethy, who is the number one best-selling author on Amazon of all time.
Oh, wow. I don't think I knew that.
She wrote a bunch of contemporaries for Harlequin or Love Swept or somewhere and just got them all back. Like when ebooks, there was a time, my first publishing contract, ebooks were not in the contract at all.
Wow.
Like ebooks didn't exist.
Yeah.
So
that's wild.
And so she collected all her books back and then she put them all up online and like started making, she built, like, she had this massive backlist and started, she was the only, like, people were getting Kindles, but there weren't enough books. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, oh, Barbara Freethy, great. That's a romance novelist. She has 22 books or however many. I'm going to buy them all. And then Bella saw what was happening and was like, I had to write my backlist. So she wrote something like 9 books in a year and a half. And she was sort of the superstar from that perspective. But then on the flip side, all these authors like Entangled started and all these other small presses started, and all these authors who could write really fast were doing it. And Tessa was one of them. Like, Tessa was maybe the first one who I'd ever, like, met aside from Bella, who was, like, just writing crazy fast.
Yeah.
And what was so interesting about Tessa was she was doing it so well. And, like, Bella, I think, is incredibly talented, and I love her books. And Tessa was able to sort of do it, too. And at the time, the idea that somebody could write 5 books in a year was, like,
I'm sure was
unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and now, God, these poor folks trying to write a book every 5 weeks.
And the truth is, like, I just don't think, I mean, like, the reality is that Bella, Tessa, these, there are, you know, there are maybe, there are a handful, however many that is, like, more than 5, but a handful of people who are able to do this, like, to write really fast and still nail the story. But, like, really what these books are, they're categories.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
They're not that long.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, I consider most Entangled books to essentially be like categories for
they're like contemporaries of like the Blaze, the Harlequin Blaze. Maybe hotter than the Blaze, maybe. I mean, certainly these books, they're just so hot.
Yeah.
Oh, but then when you actually read them, you're like, the sex scenes are really fast. Like, there's not... There's something going on in these books. The craft of them is really interesting. And I do think it's pacing. I think it's pacing.
I think so, too. I think it's also plotting. So, like, for example, I was thinking a lot because I've been thinking a lot about plotting. And I think part of it is, so I was thinking about this book, right? So we have them, like, boom out of the gates, essentially, like, they have oral sex, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like really interesting because in some ways that reads almost like erotica, right? Like the way we're getting to know them is sex. It's not a one night stand, but it sort of reads that way on page because we don't really know them at all. And then you get sort of the complication gets introduced, which is that her, you know, Hayden's family is, you know, maybe like having some money troubles and her mother is really pressing her to marry someone who's willing to sort of like bail their business out or the dad's business
out. Which is real classic, like Harlequin Presents style.
Sure. Plot. But it felt almost like I was thinking a lot about this. It felt almost reversed. Like instead of that coming first, it comes second. Right.
Yeah.
And so and it comes right on the heels, essentially, of them like having this incendiary like sort of like, oh, I don't know, again, like I'm going to say sex. It's not P and V, but it might as well be where they are like then both kind of emotionally reeling from the fact that like, oh, we thought we didn't like each other. So how come this is so hot between us? And then the cool down comes. Right. The conflict is cooling it down rather than heating it up. And I think that's like a really interesting like pattern that you don't really see a lot. So then there's like this dampening effect where they're trying essentially to put out the fire that is their romance because she thinks she's going to have to marry someone else and she just doesn't want to have this situation with him. And I just think like that's like a pretty ballsy move, frankly, right? Because that's not the story we're here for. And instead, we see that they are, like, the gravity, though, of this, like, what they have together is they can't actually fight it. So it the whole setup of that is all tension all the time. And it really works. It really works.
Well, I mean, it's also so modern. And
yes.
All of her books feel that way. Like they have this, they are set, the setups are so beautifully modern. And like there is something very, like they're all set in cities, right? Mm-hmm. So like there's something very like electric about the settings are all very powerful. There's always a sense of like activity around the characters. There's like there are always extra people. She's doing something she's telling a sort of bigger story in some ways, but then every second of the relationship feels like fresh and new because it's these – and I think part of it is because they're written in the style of a category. Like we're supposed to mm-hmm. – we're supposed to feed on them the way we feed on categories, like really fast. It takes 2.5 hours to read them like they're right. a bathtub book, right? But at the same time, they're so different than categories as we like to talk about them.
Well, and I think it's like – it is. It's really interesting. They don't rely on like tropes the same way, right? Like these two are enemies to lovers, but we're like meant to understand that that happened all in the past. There's no setup of enemies to lovers. It just is. So then it's like being, you know what I mean? It's all like kinetic energy instead of potential energy, if that makes sense. Because as enemies to lovers, sometimes you have to like set it up. We have to understand why they don't like each other. And she's just like, look, they don't. But watch me then push them off this fucking cliff that they've climbed up together. You don't need to see them climb up the cliff. We're just going to start here. And I think that there's like a tremendous amount of energy that like then gets carried out through the whole book because of like that starting point.
Yeah. And she also plays with, and that's the whole ball game. Like she's yeah. able to balance the their sort of deep seated distaste for each other with a kind of like weird sexual tension. Like, is it hate or is it like just fucking like desire? Plus all, and then layer in all these other issues that feel really real, like feel yeah. really authentic. Like, and here's the thing also, class, this is one of the first contemporaries I ever read where I felt like class was really like nailed in the sense yeah. that, yes, Hayden, obviously her family has money troubles and she has this problem, right? But even poor, Hayden's rich.
Yeah.
And they are totally different from each other.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I thought was really interesting about the way it's played is he is constantly needling her for being a rich girl. Mm-hmm. But when she like turns around and there's a couple times where she essentially like points out that he's struggling financially or like he feels that way. It's really fascinating because she has these moments where she's like, I think we're meant to understand she's just doing to him what he's done to her, but she's punching down because she has more money. Someone punching up to you being like a princess, yeah, that hurts your feelings. But when she does it, it just is like a bigger blow. And I think that's something like she has to figure out. They're not on an even playing field. And I think it's really well done. Like there's the parts where she's just like says things and immediately kicks herself because this really is a woman for whom everything really has been for sale.
I mean, and that's part of it, too. It sort of feels it's so authentically this is part of it. The whole book and all the other books in the series all feel so like authentically romance in the sense that yeah. like we've seen these stories told again and again, and we've seen these archetypes again and again. And mm-hmm. often you don't see this archetype of like the poor little rich girl who like, you know, is that yeah. this class conversation doesn't often happen in contemporaries.
Yeah.
Like when we see it happen in contemporaries, we see it happen with like the barista and the billionaire.
Right.
And you're sort of like, and it's sort of a joke. You know,
yeah, that's not real.
He comes in every day. He buys his coffee. They fall in love. He like pulls her out of the coffee shop and like, huzzah, happily ever after. Right. And it's there's no thought given to the conflict that is innate in their identities. That's a really historical conflict.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here Tessa is pulling it forward into not just like small town contemporary. She's pulling it forward into like urban city, like police officer. Yeah. Like she's really layering so many different tropes in here.
Well, and like the part and it's like skipping forward a lot, but like there's a part where essentially to fuck with them, her mother, which, and this is like the perfect example of it, right? Her mother essentially pays off Brent's sister's college tuition, right? Kind of just to fuck with them, to make it look like she's, like she sets it up so it appears that Hayden has done it as sort of like a mercy thing, right? Like, I'm just going to pay off your, you know, sibling's tuition. And it's both this moment where you're like, these people, even in their money trouble, can afford to write a check to just like pay off someone's college tuition, which is something the rest of us have fucking nightmares about. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, like him working through why it hurts him, him working through like, I wanted to do that. The fact that I worked so hard for it and you just wrote a check for it makes all of my hard work worthless. Like, it's really, it's like a really interesting scene. And I think it's like really kind of like, I don't know, it's like really playing through, I think, right? Like the problem that it sets up. And you're right. Like, we don't really see it in romance in the same way, because often, and you know, this is like gendered and we could talk about that. It's a rich man and a woman who's like, well, I'm kind of supposed to be taken care of, so it's fine. But when we see him struggling with this and what it means about his masculinity to be a like, quote unquote, provider, it's really good. I don't know. Yeah. I really found myself being like, wow, look at that.
Well, and that scene, I came back to that scene this on this reread too, the scene where like he confronts her on it and they're like having sex, and it's all like so tangled up in this really like unpleasant, awesome way. Like, there's so much going on in that scene and it's all happening
simultaneously,
fast and furious. And there's this moment where she basically like, she won't give in the sense that like her pride is too strong. Like she's so fucking tired of him just seeing her for like, as like the rich girl. And she says like, yeah, I did it. And like, it means nothing to me. Like, it mean like this month, like I spend this much money on my hair, I think she says, like in a month. And like, she's so enraged by how he can't see the truth of her. And it's so real and authentic and emotional. And she knows she's harming him. And then in that, then her like farewell in that scene is like basically saying like, you know, if I wanted a kept man, like this isn't how I wanted to keep him. And like she, and he's so, he recoils from it. And like, it's just so, I love, I mean, it's an, it will be unsurprising to our longtime listeners that I love a romance where like two people hurt each other. Like, because life is like that. Like sometimes it's really messy. And like, we say things we don't mean to say, or like
you lash out, you know their weak spots, right? I mean, this is a moment where you really see
love that. Is about that. I love a love story where like people are just like, they fuck up with each other. And Tessa, talk about somebody who like really doesn't pull that punch. Like, her characters are nuanced and angry and messy and fucked up, and they're fucked up with each other sometimes. And she somehow does it all while making it incredibly sexy and incredibly funny, like at times. And then, I mean, I will say one of the things I want to talk about, and maybe this is where we should talk about sex on the page in a Tessa Bailey novel. But like, her sex scenes do so much work in terms of like showing us the true nature of these characters. Like, it's the sex scenes in this book for the first like 80% of the book, longer, are really the only time we see Brent like honest.
I think that's true. Because I think there's so much he's hiding, and it's because of his pride, the fact that even his best friends don't really know that he has a second job, right? And so there's a lot of ways in which this is a place he's like, I'm comfortable, I can be myself here, and demands that she be herself there too.
Yeah. And I mean, and he draws it out of her with dirty talk. Like, there's, and it's so intense. And I mean, we've talked before about how I think dirty talk does a lot of work from a consent perspective on the page in romance novels. Like, dirty talking is in like ongoing enthusiastic consent. Like, as long as you are talking to each other, you are both in it in the moment. But at the same time, like, in Tessa uses it to unravel the characters. Like, she uses her, it's always her heroes who are the like true dirty talkers. And like, it's always, you know, she has another one that she wrote a book with, Eve Dangerfield called Captivated. I don't know. It's like a Dub Con-y, but like,
yeah, it's really good though.
Consensual Dub Con. It's
Captivated.
Captivated. And essentially it's like the heroine has had like a bad breakup and she's a graphic novelist and she's been writing this like erotic graphic novel just for herself where she fantasizes about her landlord, like her hot, her bananas good looking, hot, broody, grunty landlord who never says anything to her and like never interacts with her at all except to be an asshole. And she just like, she like placeholds him as a fantasy. And the graphic novel is DubCon. Or non-con even, and he finds it, like, for some reason he sees it and he identifies himself in it and basically he says, like, I can do this for you. Do you want me to do this for you? And she's like, fuck yes, right? Mm-hmm. And then, like, I think I talked last week about how one time I had a conversation with Tessa and she was like, and we were talking about, like, how, like, some erotic romance writers, they just, like, open a vein, like, a straight line to their lady parts and, like, just... you know, pour it onto the page. And like, that's how I feel about this book. But where am I going with this? But oh, basically, so in a lot of the cases in her books, and look, I've written this character too, right? Like, this is the beast archetype in terms of like, you have a character who doesn't talk, who doesn't engage and cannot be unraveled. And then suddenly, like, he gets a chance, like, get him alone and naked, and like, all he can do is talk. And that's really, like, that's a pure kink for me, one. But also, in this particular case, like, what that does is it really evolves the romance and the relationship between the hero and heroine in this, like, really intense way. Because talking is all, like, communication is all of it when it comes to romance. Like, that's all anybody in a romance wants from their other partner. Like, this just an open line of honest communication. And it can be real hot.
Well, this is interesting. I have not read this one in a long time. And one of the things I had really forgotten was that there is a whole thread in this book of her wanting control while they are in bed.
Yeah, she handcuffs him.
Yes, and she spanks him at one point. Right, exactly. And if you had asked me if there was ever...
I mean, are you surprised? This is my favorite.
No, now I'm like, oh, I get it all. But if you had ever asked me if there was a, like, Tessa Bailey book where, like, the heroine takes charge like that, I would have been like, I don't think so. So I think there's, like, she's got, like, sort of a range that I sort of focus so much on these, like, hilarious grunting heroes. Like, one of my favorites is in her Made in Jersey series. There's a hero named Duke who I swear to God might not actually say words outside of, like, them having sex. He is the gruntiest hero ever, and I'm super, super into it because it's not about them being non-communicative, right? It's about them just being, like, introverted and quiet and being good. Like, there's some of it is super, like, possessive man cave, but these heroes also are aware of that. And I think that's kind of why it works for me ultimately, is because they're aware that this is how they feel and this is their tendency and, like, when to curb it. And then when it does come out, it's when they're together having sex and therefore it's real, real hot. And he gets off on it and she gets off on it and we do too. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's important. Like, Brent isn't her quietest hero.
No.
I mean, he's not her loudest either, but there's so much intensity I just feel like don't sleep on Tessa Bailey.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of people don't sleep on Tessa Bailey. Like, but I do think I think that she's somebody who, like, if you haven't ever read Tessa's books, like, you hear about her and you think, oh, I'll get to her. Like, when we could have easily talked about her last week with Quick and Dirty, but there's something very different about the, like, I think these are, this episode and last week's episode go together in some way. But I think what's different about Tessa's books is that there's a complexity to them that that brings them out of that sort of Quick and Dirty category.
I would agree. The other thing that was really interesting, and I saw it with Cressley too, is that, like, when I went back and read this, I was like, oh, she really has some tells, right? Or some, like, some things she's, like, constantly noodling over. When Kelly and I go to art museums, sometimes we look at artists' work and we say, like, oh, she's really working through some things, right? Like, like, you can tell.
Wait, what does that mean? Say more.
So it's like, sometimes you can see an artist is just, like, working and reworking the same idea from different angles, trying to figure out what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. So often, right, does that make sense? And so yes. Sometimes, especially, you can see it if you ever go to an art museum where you see, like, one exhibit by the same person. So you're seeing their early work to their later work. And then you're really seeing, like, oh, look, like, here's the, here's this motif reappearing. Here's this part reappearing. And one of the things that was really interesting, I don't think I've read all of her books.
Well, there are a lot of them.
There's, like, a run in the middle. There are a lot of them. Also, there's some first person present ones, and I hate to say this, but I'm not going to say anything more than it was her switch from third past to first present that made me realize that I didn't like it. I was like, wait, what's happening here? Because it's here as, like, an author I love, and all of a sudden I'm sort of, like, struggling with it, but it doesn't really matter. It's fine. But there's all these ways in which there's, like, these fingerprints of Tessa Bailey that we see in other books, right? So this, like, weekend in Atlantic City, sort of the one of the big things, though, is this pull that almost all of her characters feel between, like, familial duty and mm-hmm. individual desire.
Mm-hmm.
What do I want versus what does my family want? Who am I when I'm on my own versus who am I when my family is with me or how they expect me to be? And this is something that I think you see, like in every single one of her books, is really characters working through this. And I just think it's really interesting to, like, sometimes when you go back to an earlier book, you're like, oh, there's that, this piece, and she hasn't quite worked it out yet. So this trip to Atlantic City we're going to find it again, right? Like, there's a whole scene in this book where there's, like, a whole thing with, like, the connecting doors between the rooms that, like, we see again in Driven by Fate. I mean, so there's, like, a lot of ways in which you see her, like, sort of, like, playing with the same kind of, like, it's almost like Mr. Potato Head, right? Like,
right,
I'm
right,
playing
right.
with these same parts, and I'm, like, sort of reassembling and them this time, and, like, is this the way that I want to do it? And now I'm reassembling it this way, and is this the time I want to do it? And I think it's, like, really interesting to actually, like, have enough of an author's work that you can really, like, see that in action.
Yeah. Well, you can also – there's also aside from the motifs that you're talking about – there's also a core story in most of these Tessa Bailey books. It's interesting because the one book that feels different to me is her most recent. So let me talk about what I'm talking about in terms of core story, and then we'll get there. But I think we've talked about core story before and how it feels like when you're able to look at a body of work from an author, you're often looking at especially in romance, you're looking at the same story told over and over and over again, like mm-hmm. in different ways. Like it's never the same, but it is always sort of, there's a seed of this idea. And I think one of the things that Tessa does, and something that I was really moved by in this reread, is this question of women as rock, like women as centering force for men, which I think is a really modern, again, it goes back to that modernity that I was talking about earlier, but about how the books feel really modern. Because I think in 2020, or in the last like 10 years, and again, and we go back to, you know, these books were published in 2013. She came out of the gate in 2013, like in the wake of a recession that had really like decimated men in America, and really set women up to have to be caretakers in multiple ways, like financially as well as all the other ways that women caretake. And I think that what she tells, so many of her books tell this story of like broken or damaged hero who is either struggling with self-identity or struggling with finance or struggling with kind of worldview, and the heroine who like aids and encourages him to like do more. I'm right now, I'm drawing a blank on it, but there was the police officer one where the heroine, the hero is an alcoholic and the heroine is a police, like is like, she comes in to give him, he's in basic training. Like he, I don't think it's called basic training for police officers, but he is a recovering alcoholic who has like later in life, like he's in his 30s, I want to say late 20s, early 30s, and he's decided that he wants to go back, like he's going to join the police academy and like get himself in order.
It's called Indecent Exposure.
Yeah, and she is a marksmanship expert, and she comes to teach a class. It's very like Top Gun. But at the same time, it has this kind of woman as rescuer in some way. And there's something in that story that is both powerful and really kind of like heartbreaking and also very authentic. And there's a lot of worry in that like I feel like readers can negotiate as women in the world in 2020. Because like these are real valid worries for all of us. And like a billionaire isn't gonna swoop in always and like give us an orgasm and a new car and $25,000 in our checking account. Like some of us don't have that as an option.
I don't think she's ever written a billionaire, right? No, like that is not a story she's interested in at all.
No, and Tessa's telling us like that's not our only option. Our other option is love. Like our other option is partnership. Our other option is like work. And her characters are always willing to do the work. And like that's really powerful. But now that I've sort of done that whole thing and I originally said like, oh, I think the new book is different in some way. But now that I'm actually thinking about it, I don't think that's true. Like, I think the newest book is also this version of the story. However, and this is something that I want to talk about because at some point we really should do a Marriage of Convenience interstitial. Because the new book, which is called Love Her or Lose Her, is that right?
Yes.
Is a marriage, or not Marriage of Convenience, like, but a
Marriage in Trouble.
It's a Marriage in Trouble story. And like, here's the thing about this. Tessa is younger than certainly you and I. And the beginning of her career, she has written a lot of books about young people falling in love. This one is her first married couple. And I mean, I know young romance readers, I know because I was one, right? Like people, young romance readers don't always come to this as a plot line because it feels sad. It's hard to wrap your head around like marriage being hard. But like those of you who are listening who, you know, have come to that realization either in your own marriage or seen it around you, like this book, Love Her or Lose Her, is really a book that's about like it's a next level book from Tessa Bailey. She's still telling this core story, but now she's doing it with like two people who, you know, have loved each other for a long time and now need to find that again, find themselves again.
It's, yeah, I really loved Love Her, Lose Her. I thought it was great. I think part of it too for me was one of the things about like sort of the Tessa Bailey core story is about like women being like these rocks.
Yeah.
And it's often like men men aren't changing a lot in her books, and some of them more than others, of course, right? But one of the things I actually really liked about this book is that Dominic, in Love Her Loser, is that he's the one who really has to change, you know, and he's the one who realizes, like, you know, and I think it's both of them. I think it does a really fantastic job of showing, like, both of them mm-hmm. having caught, like, sort of brought something to the table, but that, like, his journey is so carefully wrought. And I think that, like, that's, you know, ultimately why it really works for me. Whereas, you know, as much as I love Protecting What's His, which is the first book she ever read.
I mean, the two are so, it's wild because they're both great, but, like, it's barely the same writer.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is really, like, talk about seeing a writer's, like, journey, right? It's almost like you can't even believe that they're the same thing. And I think that part of what is, you know, there's a certain kind of appeal. I will say this, right? When you read about characters who know who they are and are happy with who they are and are confident with who they are. And mm-hmm. that's Derek. Derek Tyler is his name. And then you get books like with Love Her, Lose Her, where you get Dominic, who's like, I can stay this way, but it's going to mean I'm not going to have this woman in my life and it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. And there's something pretty great about that too. And I think, like, that's why, like, she just has a lot of range, even though the heroes especially tend to be, like I said, sort of taciturn, right? Like men yeah. who are just trying to, like, take care of their families and, like, do that thing. I think there's a tremendous amount of, like, I don't know, flexibility in the way that they approach that falling in love problem. And I think that's something that I think there's so much nuance there. There's so much more than just, like, the dirty talk. I mean, that's like, it's amazing. I mean,
that's what we say. We're like, oh, queen of dirty talk. But the reality is that Tessa Bailey's books are important. Like, they say a thing, they do a thing, they accomplish that thing. And I don't know her very well. I mean, I know her well enough to text her and ask her if yeah. it's her first book. But, like, I don't know her process well enough or her, you know, life well enough to know if, like, she's even aware that she's telling these stories. But, like, this is the Tessa Bailey story, and it is so essential to romance. Like, and there aren't yeah. that many people doing it, because when we see these characters, when we see these, like, kind of ex-soldiers or police officers or, you know, all these kind of, like, you know, working heroes in other places in the genre, we see them in, like, at their most heroic. And with Tessa, we don't see them as their most heroic. We see them as flawed, nuanced humans. And there's something so powerful about that.
Yeah, I think she also, I think there's a fair amount of, like, risk-taking. And one thing I want to say is, like, so in Protecting What's His, these are clearly, like, characters that she really has a lot of affection for. And they turn up again and again. There's actually, like, a kind of almost like a little sequel novella called Protecting What's Theirs. Mm-hmm. Ginger, who is the heroine of that book, has a younger sister who gets her own book. And so we see them again. And then Derek is, like, the, you know, the lieutenant or whatever, you know, to, like, sort of in a later series. But one of the things that's really interesting about the sister's book, which is called Unfixable, is that she, at the end of Ginger and Derek's first book, kind of, like, falls in love with this high school boyfriend and everything seems great between them. And then when we see her as an adult, she looks back on that relationship and can say, like, it actually wasn't so great. He wanted me to be someone different than I really was. And I changed for him and I shouldn't have had to. And I thought that took a lot of nerve, even though she was young and a teenager. And we sort of leave that book feeling like there's this HFN feeling to then, like, pull that character out and show her, like, I don't know, probably I don't know how long it is, if it's like a decade later, she's 28, I'm not really sure is my guess, and mm-hmm. say, like, have her reflect and be like, you know, it seemed like I was happy at the time, but I wasn't, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, I remember feeling like, oh, damn, you could have just left Willa. You could have just left her where she was with the high school boyfriend, but instead it's like, no. And I think it takes a lot of guts in romance to even take any romantic relationship you put on page.
A secondary romance, yeah.
And say, I was happy at that night at the mm-hmm. prom, but that wasn't who I was, and it's not who I am now. And yeah, and I was like, damn, you did it.
We talked about the Black Dagger Brotherhood series, and we didn't even bring up the fact that, like, there's an established couple at the start of that series, and she dies over the course of the first few books. Like, and Jarrah Ward took a lot of heat for that and then matches the hero with another woman in a future book and, you know, took a lot of heat. So you're right. I mean, like, that's a bold choice. And I'm not surprised that Tessa did it, though. Like, she's so good. She's so...
Yeah.
I mean, I also, you know, I'm on a purely writerly note. I'm blown away by Tessa's discipline. She produces so much content. Like,
yeah,
she's constantly, aside from just being a really fast and skilled writer, she has a really devoted fan base that she cares for and feeds with, like, thought and love. I've never seen anybody manage a crowd the way Tessa manages a crowd. Like, she's such a class act. She's just great. She's one of those people who, like, sometimes over the course of this podcast, I've said, like, don't meet your idols. Like, you can meet Tessa. She's great.
Yeah. Well, I think the other thing too is, I think she's, and again, you know, she's in, however, right? If it's 2013, we're talking like 7 years of production, right? I think she also is like trying new things. I mean, and I mm-hmm. think that's the other reason it sort of like works for me is, I mean, clearly, like, I don't actually read a lot of her cop books. Some of them have worked for me and some of them haven't. Like the one with the alcoholic Indecent Exposure, I did really like. Some of them don't necessarily work for me, but that's not like it's like really all she's doing. You know, she has a book about rock stars. She tried like a BDSM series. You know, she publishes stuff indie, kind of in between her big, like, now Avon releases, right? So she's got a book coming out in a couple weeks, which I cannot wait to get my hands on.
Yeah, paranormal rom-com.
You know, I think she's really, like, I think that's the other reason is, even if, like, one of her books doesn't work for you, she's trying so many different things that there's a way in which, and I respect that. I respect an author who's, like...
She hustles, man.
Constantly pushing. Yeah, she's hustling, and she's also, like, trying new things, and she... And I do. I really like it. So even the times a book, like, really hasn't quite worked for me, it doesn't really matter because I can still see... It just feels like, okay, that one wasn't a good match, but there's so much else out there that she's doing, and I love it.
Mm-hmm. We like her.
We like her a lot. You know what I really want to talk about, though? Wait, can we talk about the ending of Asking for Trouble, where he is literally banging down the courthouse doors to stop this wedding?
I love it. I mean, I love a stopped wedding.
I honestly loved it.
I mean, You know why? Because, like, it was perfect. It was a perfect low moment. Like, it was a perfect, you know, frantic. I love a frantic hero.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, I love a frantic hero.
Yes.
And,
yes.
You know, it's a great book. It's a great book. Yes, obviously, I like it a lot because she, like, handcuffs him and spanks him and, like, and he's
it's
filthy
real hot.
And I love it. But, like, yeah. I also love it because I just think it's one of those romances that I know I can go back to anytime and reread it and it will give me joy and it will hit all the right notes and scratch all the right itches.
Yeah.
And I just, and what's wild about it is when I picked it, early when we made this list and I was like, Tessa Bailey, I thought, oh, maybe I'll get there and it'll just be like, you know, a one-handed read. Right. And the truth is, like, on the reread, reading, like, every word and actually thinking about it this time, I realized, like, how much work Tessa is doing in these books. And it's so effortless. Nobody, like, you don't notice until you notice.
I agree. 100%.
Great job, Tessa Bailey.
A plus.
So, Jennifer...
I don't know what we're reading next, Sarah. So you're just going to, everybody's going to have to wait. We'll just announce it.
We'll announce it next week in the interstitial. We'll decide it between now and then. Or maybe we'll announce it on Twitter or something before then.
Yeah, exactly. We'll figure it out.
So you can call us and tell us about a book that blooded you at 646-450-3766. This is the only way you can get that telephone number. Thank you all so much for calling in. We love your voicemails a whole lot. Also, I saw a couple people talking online about how they were the voicemail of the week a couple of weeks ago.
I know. It's so exciting.
Everybody
it really
loves
is.
To hear themselves. So if I you want to hear yourself on the radio or on the whatever this is.
I know. On the radio.
On the internetio.
You're my favorite. Okay, wait, let me say this part because Kelly was like, listen, you need to do better. So okay. You can buy t-shirts and totes from Jordan Dene at jordandene.com because she was like, people aren't going to go to show notes every time, or from buttons and pins from Kelly at jenreadsromance.com. And Eric Mortensen is our producer. And we will let you know next time or at some point what we're going to read. We forgot to talk about it and we can't decide right now because we've tried that before and mistakes were made.
Didn't work out. We will be back next week with an interstitial. Somebody actually texted or Instagrammed us with a good idea that I think we're going to do next week. And yeah, we love you.
Read a Tessa Bailey book. You won't be sad.
Yeah, there are like 4,000 of them. You'll be very happy you found a new author.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Hi, my name is Christina, and I'm from Sacramento, California. The book that blooded me was Lindsay Sands' Love Bites. When I was a senior in high school, early part of the year, my best friend sat behind me in school and she read every single day. And one day I turned around and I was like, what are you reading? And she had this purple book with a little bat on it. And she goes, you know what? I'm going to stop. I'll just give it to you. And she gave it to me and I read it. And it was about Etienne Arginot, who is a 300-year-old bachelor. And he is a vampire. And he falls in love with Rachel Garrett, who's a morgue worker. There's some accident and some hijinks involved. I read that book and it just was like, oh, I need more of this kind of stuff. So I came back to school 2 days later, gave her the book, and I gave her money so that she could go buy it for me because I loved it so much and it was her copy. So she went to the bookstore the following weekend, and what she returned with was not Love Bites by Lindsay Sands, but Gina Showalter's The Nymph King. And that book, Gina is a master. Her Valerian is the Nymph King, and he and the other male nymphs down in Atlantis have gone, they're in charge of guarding a door that goes to our world because Atlantis is under the sea and it's where all of the mythical creatures live, and they go out and, you know, kidnap some women, but they're looking for mates. It's a little bit of a touchy premise these days, but Gina, I mean, all of her books are what led me to Cressley Cole. So they're just wonderful books. And Gina is just a master at her craft, just as much as Cressley. And I hope you guys have read it. And if you want to look me up on Twitter, it's Christina Vince, and I will hopefully hear from someone. Thank you.